Did you know that in the Hindu tradition, as well as in the Algonquin tradition, the turtle is known to have something to do with the world, the land that we stand on? In the Hindu tradition, the world is rested on an elephant, and the elephant is standing on a tortoise. Supposedly, William James, the father of American psychology, had a conversation with an old lady. I imagine in my mind a European lady, but it could be any old lady, who told him that the earth rested on the back of a huge turtle. "But my dear lady," said James, "what holds up the turtle?" "Ah," she said, "that's easy. He's standing on the back of another turtle." "But would you be so good to tell me what holds up the second turtle?" "It's no use, Professor," said the lady, avoiding the logical trap. "It's turtles, 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 all the way down." For those of us that would like some logical progression from cause and effect, turtles all the way down will remain forever unsettling. To the logical mind, there must be something under those turtles. They can't possibly just be floating out in space now, could they? Or could they? In the Algonquin story, there is this unsettlement is somehow addressed when the turtle climbs onto that last piece of land that is just above the waters of the flood. And then the application of the mud brought by the loon that spread over the turtle's shell, which together magically transforms the turtle and altogether creates this world that we call Earth. There are many stories that describe how we came to be here in this world, on this continent, to be specific. The question is for me is, where do we start that story? How far back do we go? And then how far into the future do we project ourselves? Turtle Island creation story came from the Algonquin people, but they too, according to their traditions, their stories, and stories in the book that I read to the children this morning, refer to an ancient tribe that came even before them. A race of people that, according to legend, had the power to communicate with animals and even to transform into animals. They were called the Lenape, and the Algonquin referred to them as the grandfathers, or the original people, or the real people. These Algonquin ancestors go back 1,000, perhaps 2,000, 3,000 years. They came from a land, according to the legends, of ice and snow, far to the north and the west. Perhaps they were the first migration of humans to the land now known as North America, the first of many migrations. First people, or second people, or third, or fourth. New waves of travelers coming to this land, explorers, conquerors, slaves, and seekers of survival. The Lenape, the Algonquin, Haida, Salish, the Vikings, the French or English, the Ukrainian, the Malaysian, Filipina, Chinese, Japanese, Indian, Iranian. We have all come from somewhere. And today, we are standing together on this piece of earth called Canada, in all our splendid diversity. This morning I want to look forward, from the present to the forward, which is not to say that we are going to ignore the stories of our history. In sermons from this pulpit over the last 2 months, we have heard some of the stories of our Indigenous people. We've heard how we must remember to invite these stories to be told, and that we, in our integrity and with respect and compassion, will continue to listen. And we've heard stories of the toll of the residential school program and what it had on the families and the communities. A cruel systemization for the elimination of Aboriginal culture and language and community. We have heard of the Canadian government's failed attempts to improve these communities. And some of us are angry, despairing, confounded that after 150 years or 5 and 20 years, there are still huge issues that remain unsolved. And we cannot ignore the systemic racism in this country. No, we are not going to ignore the past. We are going to continue to be watchful. We'll write our letters. We'll express our outrage and our grief. Because we are a hopeful people, and we are a restless people. And we are restless as the changes that we want now are so long, long overdue. We're not going to forget the past, but we do have a present to deal with and a future. We stand in this world together, Aboriginal and immigrant, diverse and wholly interdependent. For all the injustices, past and present, there are also stories that are being lived today that need to be told. Stories of bravery, stories of creative resistance, stories of heroes and heroines, of diverse peoples working together, because we are standing together on Turtle Island. So let me tell you about one person, Chief Liz Logan, and the area of land that is called Treaty 8. Liz Logan was born in the bush in northern BC. Her father was a trapper, and the family visited the Hudson's Bay Company about twice a year. At 8, she was sent off to residential school. By the time she was ready for high school, the residential schools in her area of northern BC were being phased out. Unfortunately, she was sent for her high school education away from her family down to Victoria. But after high school, she trained herself. She went to business school, and then she went to nursing school and became a registered nurse. And then she moved to Calgary to have her family. She chose to stay home as a mother and raise her 3 children because she was adamant that they be given a really good childhood, because she wanted to make up for the fact that she knew what a really bad childhood was like. When her children had grown and moved on, Liz got a job with the Department of Indian Affairs in Calgary. And over 8 years, she worked her way up to the position of acting manager in the Lands and Trust Department. And then, at 44 years old, she had a heart attack. Luckily for her, her husband had just taken a CPR course. And though her heart did stop, he was able to get it going again. As you can imagine, that heart attack brought on a period of deep soul searching for Liz. She says, quote, "Now, I'm a spiritual person. I believe there's something bigger than us, although at times I was reluctant to name it as God because of what I went through at residential school, where we were forced to pray all the time and were punished because we were heathens and weren't civilized. But I knew after my heart attack that there was something greater than me and that I had to do something for the greater good. I couldn't just be wasting space." And she asks herself the question, but what was I supposed to be doing? Well, with that question in mind, she returned to her roots, her home, the Fort Nelson First Nation in northern BC. 2 months after she arrived, she was elected chief. And that moves me. So now we come to Treaty 8. According to Chief Liz Logan, Treaty 8 is the most comprehensive treaty in Canada. It covers one-third of the province of British Columbia and huge parts of Alberta and Saskatchewan and the Northwest Territories. And guess what? It's full of resources. Lots of natural gas and oil and mining. The treaty is supposed to allow the Aboriginal people the right to hunt, fish, and trap in those territories for, quote, from the treaty, for as long as the sun shines, the river flows, and the grass grows. It's not happening. What is happening is the provincial and federal governments, the mining companies and the natural gas companies and the oil companies have moved in, ignoring Treaty 8. You've heard about LNG projects. LNG stands for liquid natural gas. Chinese, Australian, American, and Malaysian gas companies are vying for the rights to extract the natural gas from BC's north and ship it overseas via areas around Prince Rupert. I've heard what is happening in the north today, and you may have as well, is equivalent to the gold rush of the mid-1800s. It's a bit of a feeding frenzy. Huge amounts of money are being handed out because there are huge amounts of money to be made. And we are all going to hear a lot more about fracking in the near future. Fracking is now how the natural gas is removed from the ground, where large amounts of water are pushed into the ground that force the gas out. And then the gas is sent to the LNG plants. And of course, we know, where does that gas come from? It comes from the area known as Treaty 8, this huge amount of land. Right now, there is just over or almost 4,000 natural gas wells that have been dug, and it's expected to rise to 6,000, according to Chief Logan. Now, I'm not fully informed about fracking, so I'm not going to make statements about whether it's safe or not. But I would at least counsel caution for moving forward too quickly and before the environmental assessments are completed. There is constant pressure on the residents of BC's north to say yes to the huge hydroelectric projects and the mining and the LNG projects. And most of us realize that when we are in a pressured situation like that, our needs, things like respect and equality and honest communication, get swept away. So this is why Chief Liz Logan has gone to the United Nations to ask for help to protect the land of her people that her people have lived on for thousands of years. We are hoping, she says, that the United Nations will be able to convince the provincial government to do a regional strategic environmental assessment to look at the cumulative impacts of all this development now, before the LNG projects are discussed. End of quote. This strategy may already be too late, as just this week, the Premier of BC, in my opinion, a bizarre gymnastics of logic, said that regardless of the environmental impact in BC of extracting the natural gas, by sending it to China, we would be doing the world an environmental favor because China would mine and burn less coal. Now, I don't want to end here on a note of confoundedness or confusion or even despair. Chief Liz Logan is a hero as far as I'm concerned. A spiritual warrior, if you will, a steward of the land, in that her values are clear to her and she has focused her life on being of service to her people and the land that they call home. I see that her commitment to her people and the land that supports them is a commitment to the land that supports us all. European, Chinese, Indian, Malaysian, Iranian, all of us. It's people like Chief Liz Logan that will make the difference in the days to come. And the fact that she is Aboriginal is both significant and not. It is highly significant because of her history, for one. She survived the residential school experience. She consciously chose to make sure her children had a more positive life. I do not know what her personal healing journey was. I can imagine it was pretty tough at times. And yet, she has continued. And she continues to be of service to this land and all her relations. She's not the only residential school survivor who has gone on to heal and to serve. There are great and wondrous things happening in the First Nations, Métis, and Inuit cultures. And we, down here in the South, need to pay attention. Did you know that the Aboriginal population is close to 1.5 million and on its way to 2 million? It's the fastest growing population in our country. Did you know that in 1927, Indians were not even allowed to hire a lawyer? And that now, today, there are thousands of Aboriginal lawyers? Did you know that according to John Ralston Saul in the Globe and Mail, that today there are over 30,000 Aboriginal universities and colleges? Wow. John Ralston Saul, in a commentary in the Globe and Mail from last August, wrote this: "The simple truth is that we are all witnesses to the remarkable comeback of the Aboriginal people. This will mean fundamental shifts in power, in financing, and how we all live together. We can pretend this is not happening. We can maneuver in order to delay it. But it is going to happen. We have everything to gain and nothing to lose by embracing this comeback as living proof of the strength of these cultures and these people. We are witnessing how central they are to the future of this country." End of quote. The future of this country, I say, depends on each of us hearing our individual call to serve as we can. And I see a day coming in the not too distant future when we are going to need to stand together. Aboriginal, Inuit, Métis, European, Chinese, Korean, Filipina, Iranian, all. Stand together, perhaps in nonviolent resistance, to stop the destruction of these lands that we call home. If we are smart, we will face our destiny together, so that 7 generations from now, there is still a Turtle Island that will sustain everyone. May this be so. Thank you for listening.